Welcome to the Kate Languages podcast. I'm your host, Kate Clifton. I'm a former MFL teacher who left the classroom in 2017 to set off on my own adventure. Since then, I've developed my passion for helping teachers through creating time-saving teaching resources, delivering language lessons and CPD to languages teachers, and of course, through this podcast. I've had some wonderful feedback from teachers about how my work is helping them with their everyday teaching, and I love connecting with teachers from all over the world. To get in touch, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. I'm at Kate Languages on both. Or you can email me through my website, katelanguages.co.uk. But for now, grab a cuppa, although maybe not if you're listening in the car. Sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of the Kate Languages podcast. Hey, how are you? Welcome back to the Kate Languages podcast. This is season 8. I can't actually believe I'm still going. Yeah, and people are actually still listening, which is absolutely amazing. But if you're new here, hello, welcome. I hope you enjoy this episode and I hope this will encourage you to subscribe and listen to some more episodes of the Kate Languages podcast. For those of you who aren't new here, welcome back. I hope you've had a fabulous summer. So this episode is being released in September 2024. And for those of you who've been around for a while, you will know that every September I set myself some resolutions. So in today's episode, I'm going to be talking a little bit about my September resolutions and my word of the year for my business this year, which I've never done before. So this is a new thing I'm trying out for this academic year. And I've got a few brilliant episodes coming up this season. I'm really excited about the things that I'm going to be talking about. So next episode is going to be a conversation with Joe Dale. So again, if you're new around here and you don't already know, Joe Dale is my podcast producer and editor. But more than that, he is an absolute expert when it comes to all things AI. And he's basically the education tech guy. He is a languages teacher as well, but he does lots of stuff with people all over the world, all different subjects, all focused on AI and tech and things like that. So I've already had the conversation with him and it was such a brilliant conversation. It builds on a conversation that we had last year. So between now and next week, when that episode will be released, I can highly recommend going back a year, having a listen to the first conversation that I had with him, which was more of an introduction to AI and ChatGPT, and then having a listen to this one. And I've got to say, I'm really, really getting on board with AI now. And I think it is an absolute game changer for us. And I think it can be a really, really positive thing. So really excited for you to hear that conversation. And then I'm going to have two or three episodes where I'm just going to be kind of talking on my own. So I always have 6 episodes per season. I like to have one episode as a Q&A to start with, then an interview, and then I've got 3 conversations with myself, if they could be called conversations, 3 episodes where it's just me. I'm going to be talking about dictations. I'm going to be talking about passive income for teachers. So you might have seen on my Instagram recently, I want to start supporting teacherpreneurs. I don't know if that's an actual word. Edupreneurs. I don't know if any of these are real words. Anyway, teachers who either have a side hustle or who are wanting to, build a bit of income, or even leaving the classroom, building a tuition business, or, something still within the world of education, but working for yourself. So if you do follow me on Instagram and you want to see more content on that, send me a DM with the words close friends and I'll add you to my close friends list. So I've started sharing more content on my Instagram, which is all about business type stuff. So business, social media, marketing, email lists, all that kind of stuff. Got to admit, the kind of stuff I absolutely love, but I know it's probably not that interesting for a lot of teachers. But yeah, if you are wanting to build a business, like I say, either as a side hustle or to leave education completely, then yeah, get in touch on Instagram. So DM me, close friends on Instagram. I'm at Kate Languages on Instagram. If you don't already follow me, another episode I'm going to be doing, I'm quite nervous about this one. I'm going to be talking about how I have learnt from failure. So I'm going to be really open and honest about some of my failures in my working life. I'm not going to go into all of my personal failures, but some failures in my working life, but how actually they turn out to be really positive things and how you learn from these things. And then the last episode of the season, so I'm not going to be doing any live episodes this year. I've done a few live episodes over the past year or so, the past kind of three or four seasons, and I absolutely loved them. And I'll go into this in more detail when I talk about my September resolutions, but I don't want to do any work in the evenings, in a nutshell. And these were evening sessions. And like I say, they were absolutely brilliant. And I've had some great conversations with people. And I think they've been really, really useful episodes to do. And I think people have enjoyed coming along to them. They're definitely well worth a listen if you haven't already listened to my live episodes. But I'm moving over to doing coaching episodes. So every season, I'm going to record a coaching call with one of my, either my Buy Everything community or potentially somebody on my email list or my, you know, one of my Instagram followers or anything like that. So if you would like to have a free coaching call with me and you don't mind it being recorded for a podcast and like broadcast to the entire internet, then yeah, get in touch, send an email, hello@katelanguages.co.uk. Tell me what your question is about, literally about anything. So as I say, I really want to be supporting teachers with their side hustles or leaving education. But if you are very happy in your job and you've got one question, it might be something to do with the new GCSE. It might be something to do with curriculum design. So I do these coaching calls quite regularly. If you don't want to be on the podcast and you'd like a coaching call, you can just go onto my website, katelanguages.co.uk. In my store, there is an option to book a Pick My Brains call, it's called, with me. You can book 30-minute Pick My Brains call, which is essentially what these kinds of things are going to be. So lots and lots of exciting things coming up. As I said, every September, I set resolutions. So two or three resolutions. I don't tend to set New Year's resolutions in January because I'm in the depths of winter and I'm cold and I'm fed up and it's kind of between Christmas and my birthday's in January and I'm just like, I don't really think that January in the UK is a really good time for setting resolutions. However, I feel towards the end of August and at the beginning of September, I don't know if it's just years and years and years of conditioning of like, it's the end of the summer holidays, it's the start of a new school year. I always feel a bit more rejuvenated, excited. I plan my business in academic years. So I started, you know, between September and August. So apologies to those of you who live in other countries. I know I have quite a few Australian followers and listeners who are like, no, the academic year does start in January. Anyway, so yeah, so in Britain, the academic year starts on the 1st of September. And I've always found that it's a time when you're kind of, you know, looking to the future, you're planning for the year. And for me, it's just a really great time to set resolutions. And this year, as I alluded to a moment ago, I have decided to set a word of the year, word of the academic year for my business. So this is something I do in January. Every January, I set a word of the year. My word of the year for 2024 is strength. And that is something that encompasses my personal life, my social life, my health, and my business. And I felt strength this year. It's definitely been something I've needed. And this is like for personal reasons that I don't want to go into. So, you know. So yeah, so strength has been a really, really important word for me this year. And then I wanted to choose another word for my business for the academic year 2024 to 25. And that word is value. So I want to ensure that everything that we are doing, and I say we because I have an incredible team of tutors, I've got assistants who work with me, and as I mentioned, Joe is my podcast producer and editor. So I'm building this wonderful team of people, and I just want to make sure that we are providing as much value as we can to you, the people who listen to my podcast, the people who download my resources, the people who join my workshops and things like that. I want them to be absolutely fantastic value. They're not ever going to be the cheapest. Okay. So I charge for workshops and I charge for the majority of my resources. Yes, I have a lot of free resources and I have this free podcast and there are things that I do for free. But at the end of the day, I'm running a business and, you know, I have to eat. We need to live in a house. So it's not always going to be the cheapest, but I want everybody who hands over their hard-earned money to Kate Languages or manages to persuade their finance departments to make an order, which seems to be like getting blood out of a stone sometimes. But, you know, that when you put in that time and effort to invest in my business, but essentially by, you know, buying everything or signing up for a workshop, but any of those kind of things, I want you to come away thinking, my gosh, that's good value. So that's why I've chosen the word value as my word of the year for my business. And then three resolutions that I've made for September are sort of business related, but also related to my personal life as well. So the first one is an income goal. I set an income goal last year. I don't talk openly about what my income goal is. Personally, I'm not that comfortable talking about, you know, how much I want to earn and how much I do earn. All I'm going to say is I smashed my income goal last year, which I was very, very proud of. It was a bit of a kind of mental block, a mental barrier for me, the amount of money that I wanted to earn last year. And I pushed through that and I'm so proud and happy. And again, this comes back to the word value, because I still think what I'm providing is excellent value, but I had the confidence to double my prices in many respects, change my business from you could buy like a £2 individual resource to actually now it's just subscriptions for £97 a year. And yes, that helps my with my income goal and it helps to increase my income. Got to say, guys, I still don't earn a huge amount of money. So don't think like, oh, has Kate Languages become some kind of like multi-million pound empire? No, it really hasn't. But it is something that I really needed to do. And I needed to get that confidence to increase my income. So I managed to do that last year. So if we're looking at academic years as well, I tried to do the maths kind of like 2.5 times from academic year 22 to 23. My income for that academic year, kind of 2.5 times that for the academic year just gone, so 23 to 24. And I'm hoping to possibly double it again, but who knows? Who knows? But either way, I do have an income goal and it is something that I do really, really focus on. And I think it's really important. And as I say, I do want to support people who are thinking about having a side hustle and building their own businesses and things like that. And money is a really, really important part of that. Like, what's the point in having a side hustle if it's not actually bringing in any revenue? So there we go. Income goal. My second resolution is to be more intentional with my time. So my son, for those of you who've been following me for a long time, like I didn't even have a kid when I first started Kate Languages. He is 4.5 and starting school in September. So actually, by the time this episode is released, he will have been at school for a week or so, which is just mad. Luckily, I think probably more luckily for me, because I find it less stressful. He has been at the same place for nursery and preschool, and then he's carrying on at the same school. So he's literally going from the preschool classroom next door into the reception classroom. And they've already had quite a lot of transition. Like they've practiced having their lunches up in the big canteen and all that kind of stuff. Loads of his little friends are all staying on. So he pretty much knows most of the children in his class already. So it's really lovely. It's an incredible school. We're just so, so, so lucky. But all that said, it's a huge transition for all of us. So obviously, having a baby was a huge transition for me and my husband. And then, you know, having a preschooler and fitting everything in around him and doing a bit of part-time work and, you know, him starting nursery. So he didn't even go to nursery until he was 2, till after he'd turned 2. My mum used to look after him a little bit. And then he started nursery when he was 2, but that was literally like 2 half days a week to start with. And then we gradually built it up. And then throughout preschool, he was like 3 and 4. He did 3 days a week, but they're only school time days. So yeah, so that transition up to 5 days a week, I think it's going to be quite a lot for me. And I'm still figuring out, like, am I going to work those 5 days? Am I going to you know, and this is where it comes back to the resolution of being more intentional with my time. Am I going to actually take a day off every single week? So like on a Friday, possibly a Thursday. I'm finding like I get quite tired on a Thursday. So, you know, Thursday or Friday, I might take the day off. Yeah, so that's something that I've not really had to think about for like 5 years or so, how much I'm actually going to be working. But being more intentional with my time means that, as I alluded to a few moments ago, I don't want to work in the evenings anymore. So if I am going to be working 5 days a week and we're getting up, you know, I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning because I like to have a bit of time to have a cup of tea. I try to read for like, I try to read for half an hour every morning. That never happens. So maybe like 15, 20 minutes in the morning while I'm having a cup of tea. And then we get him up at 7 o'clock. We have to leave the house by 8 o'clock. It's like 25-minute drive to where his school is. So, you know, we need to leave the house at like 8 o'clock. By the time I get home, it's like gone 9 o'clock. It's a long day. And then I'm working all day. And I mean, sorry, I feel like you're going to just get out a teeny tiny violin. I know that I do not work anywhere near where teachers work. And to be able to say, I don't want to work in the evenings, I know comes from a massive place of privilege. Another thing, which again, I know comes from a huge place of privilege, but as teachers, I think you might, hopefully, this might resonate with you a bit, is that I don't want to work in the summer. So this summer, my son has 8 weeks summer holiday at his school. So he had 2 weeks. We went to France camping, which is absolutely lovely. And then he had a week in holiday club. So they do run a holiday club over the summer. And then he had another 2 weeks off. And then at the moment, it's actually still August while I'm recording this, and he is in holiday club for the week this week. And then we've got another 2 weeks and then he's starting school. And I planned it deliberately like that. And I wanted him to be in every single day just to practice getting up and going in every single day, which is proving to be. So it's actually Thursday while I'm recording this. And this is why I'm saying I'm getting quite tired on a Thursday. So, yeah, but I don't want to do that again next summer. And I just think, what is the point of being my own boss, of running my own business, of, you know, continuing to work with teachers in the education space? People don't want to do a lot of the work that I'm doing. This summer, I have run a couple of workshops, which were quite popular, but generally, people don't want to work in the summer holidays. And I just have memories of, so my parents were all teachers, so I've got four parents, two parents, two step parents. My stepdad wasn't a teacher. He ran his own business. But my mum, dad and stepdad were all teachers. And I just have memories of my summers of like, I don't know, just these long, lazy summers. And again, massive, massive place of privilege. We used to spend a lot of our summers in Spain. So we would go to Spain for like 3, 4, even 5 weeks during the summer. My parents had a little flat down there in the place where they still spend their summers out there. So, but we can do that because they still got a place there and we can go, you know, and just kind of just go and hang out in Spain for a few weeks in the summer. I'm not sure how my cat's going to feel about that. But I just, you know, when I think of my childhood and my lovely long summers, I just think, I just want my son to have that. So yeah, so if I at any point start saying, ooh, I'm going to do some workshops next summer, or I'm going to do a summer school, like I'm going to teach, please, you have my permission to DM me and say, Kate, you said that you're not going to work in the summer. And I've told my husband the same, and I've told my friends the same, like, do not let me work next summer. And I don't want to work in the evenings anymore, apart from like easy work. So I've been creating some vocabulary booklets, which is quite just sort of mechanical work that I can do. It's been great this summer watching the Olympics and the Paralympics in Paris. Just watching them on the TV and yeah, like creating these vocab booklets. But as a rule, I don't want to work in the evenings anymore. I don't want to work in the school holidays and definitely not over the summer. Okay, the third one, I'm going to be much quicker about this one because I've got loads of questions. This is meant to be a Q&A episode. I'm just waffling on. So I've got lots and lots and lots of questions. But my third resolution is really focusing on my physical health. And this relates back to my word of the year strength for my, you know, like my January to December word of the year for strength. And it kind of relates to being more intentional with my time as well. So I'm 43 now. Like I'm quite happy to tell people how old I am. And my gosh, I'm just like, my physical health is just nowhere near what it used to be pre-child. Yeah, just, I don't know. So I'm really, really focused on my physical health. So this has nothing to do with losing weight. It's nothing to do with anything like that. I want to be stronger. I want to be physically stronger. I find when I'm playing with my son, I just don't have the energy to like jump around and, you know, muck around with him. I'm terrified of falling over. And I just, yeah, I just want to be physically healthier. So that includes, you know, eating. I mean, we eat, I'm vegetarian and I basically eat vegetables. That's pretty much all I eat. Don't worry, I do get protein. Before people start saying, oh, yeah, you need your protein. I get plenty of protein. But yeah, I, you know, I eat pretty healthily. But it's a lot for me, it's a lot more about, you know, movement and doing a bit of strength training and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so that's going to be a focus and also something that I need to actually really plan into my day a lot more than I already do. So there we go. That's a bit of an update of my September resolutions and my word of my academic year of value. All of the questions for the Q&A section in this episode are about the new GCSE. So I'm really sorry if you are not in England. I mean, you might have enjoyed that waffly catch-up of life at KLHQ, Kate Languages HQ. No one else is using this. I really want people to use Sorry. Anyway, so if you're not in England, this might be quite boring for you. However, there are some things about the new GCSE that I think are really, really helpful for general languages teaching. So don't just switch off and just think, oh no, this isn't for me. So there's some really, really good questions. I have set up a Facebook group over the summer, which has gone mad. There's like over 3,000 people in the group now. And I've had some amazing questions through the group and some amazing support and help, and people are uploading files and all that kind of thing. So if you want to join the Facebook group, I'll pop a link in the show notes. If you can't bother to look at the show notes, just go onto Facebook and search for MFL GCSE in brackets 2026, because that's when the first exams are. And please answer the questions. I reckon I'd have about 5,000 people if in the group if people actually answered the question. I'm not going to let you in if you don't answer the questions, because I don't want people in the group who are not languages teachers. So if you're not answering the questions, I'll assume you're not a languages teacher. And yeah, I'm not going to let you in. So there you go. I'm being very strict. I've also had to kick some people out for breaking the rules. Okay. Can you tell I was maybe a slightly strict teacher? Right, I've got a few quite quick questions I'm going to answer really quickly, and then some more in-depth things and potentially things that I could even do like a whole podcast episode on. So yeah, we'll see how we get on with these. So the quick fire questions are more related to the speaking exam than anything really. So because I was getting loads of these questions, I did actually run a couple of workshops about the speaking exam. So I'm really in kind of, you know, speaking exam mode at the moment. And I feel like because as the teachers, you are also the examiners for the speaking exam, I feel like this is something that really concerns teachers and it's something you really feel like you want to get your head around. Okay, so first question, is it worth giving them a general conversation booklet? So this is a really interesting question. I'll try and answer it as quickly as I can. This is for the speaking exam, obviously. For both AQA and EdExcel, there is a photo task followed by a conversation. So yes, I do think it's worth giving them potential questions that they can prepare. And in the other parts of the exam, there will be questions as well. So what I would do, go through the sample assessment materials and pick out the questions that are included in the sample assessment materials. Even go through the French, German, and Spanish, translate them. Doesn't matter if you don't speak the language, put them into, well, Google Translate, I mean, it's probably the easiest one. And for something like that, like if you can then correct the language yourself, it's absolutely fine. Or ChatGPT, and you know, it doesn't matter if you don't speak the language, translate them all. So you've got an idea of the types of questions that are going to be asked, for example, as follow-on questions for the read aloud task, for example. So yeah, get all of those kind of questions. Yes, create a kind of general conversation booklet, but the exam boards are really, really, really clear that the conversation should not sound like you are asking them a pre-learned set of questions. All right. So you mustn't sound like you're asking them a pre-learned set of questions. I've said it twice because it is so important. And when you read the guidelines, it's so clear. I guess they've had years of listening to general conversations that are just a set of pre-learned questions, and they don't want it to sound like that. They want it to sound like a conversation. But equally, and I see this from the perspective of the teachers who I teach. So another part of the Kate Languages business, if you are not aware of this already, is that we, because I've got a lovely team of tutors, we tutor teachers who need to improve a language. So I have tutored, and my tutors have also worked with people who are basically just trying to keep one step ahead of the students. And they are teaching GCSE because we do have a massive recruitment crisis here in the UK. So they are actually teaching GCSE, and they barely speak the language themselves, and they're not confident. And I think to have a conversation in a speaking exam when you're not confident in the language yourself is going to be quite challenging for a lot of people. So yeah, that was meant to be a really quick answer, wasn't it? It wasn't. So, is it worth giving them a general conversation booklet? Yes. Will staff be able to choose any questions in the speaking exam? That goes back to what I've just said. Yes, you can in the conversation part. Another quick question about the speaking exam. Will students need contrasting and comparing language when it comes to the two photo cards? And the very quick answer to that is no. For AQA, they need to describe two photos. For Edexcel, they only need to describe one. So definitely they don't need that. So for AQA, yes, they have to describe two photos. I have not seen anywhere that they have to say, whereas on photo A, there are three people, on photo B, there are only two people. They don't need to be able to use that kind of language. And the fourth question, which is also about the speaking exam, is about the read aloud task. The follow-on questions for the read aloud task, the question is, are they comprehension questions about the text, or are they for the people to answer about themselves? And the answer is the latter. So they read a text out loud, and then the questions that follow on that are compulsory questions that you as a teacher examiner have to ask have to be answered by the candidate about themselves. It's not comprehension about the text. If you want to go into more depth about that, you can purchase the recordings to my workshops that I did over the summer as part of a bundle. So I've done a bundle on my website for £57, and that is both of those speaking exam workshops plus three more workshops that I'm going to be doing over this academic year. One of them is going to be on dictations, and I'm going to do a podcast episode on dictations as well. And then the other two are still to be decided, because I want to see kind of how people are getting on with the new GCSE over this coming year before I kind of commit to topics for the workshops. Okay, I've got a few more quick questions which are related to the vocab list. Firstly, do you happen to know if the vocab lists are the same for AQA and Edexcel? No, they are not. So 85% of the prescribed vocab lists are taken from the most common, I think it's like 2,000 words maybe. So there is a common word list, and from those, they have to take 85%. But even that 85% is going to be different across AQA and Edexcel, because they have a choice about which words they actually take from the common word list. And then 15% can be cultural words and other words that the exam boards have decided that they think is important and useful for young people to talk about, the things that they want to talk about. And they've added that on. And I think it's pretty clear. If you download the Excel spreadsheets from the exam board websites, it's pretty clear. It says like required or other. So required is one of the 85%. Other is the ones that the exam boards have chosen. Another quick vocab question. Do you happen to know where I can access a list of AQA GCSE vocab by topic, please? Yes, I do. So on the AQA website, they actually do have a good scheme of work vocab word documents that you can download for all three languages. I'm pretty sure that, yes, definitely for all three languages. And I have been creating over the summer. So as I just mentioned, watching the Olympics and Paralympics in the evenings, I'm sitting there on my laptop creating some vocab booklets. So I'm kind of putting together the vocab. I've made it much more user-friendly, nice little pictures, and I've really broken it down into much smaller sections. The PDFs of those are free with my free resources. Just go to katelanguages.co.uk and it's on the homepage. Click on there and you can sign up for my free resources there on the homepage. And please do subscribe to my mailing list while you're doing that. Thank you very much. But yeah, so I've got those. And then if you want the Word documents, and over the coming months, I'm going to be creating vocab booklets with like vocab learning activities in them. So crosswords, recover, write, check type things, all those things like vocab matching and all that kind of thing as extra booklets. And that's all with my paid resources subscriptions, which I haven't mentioned this throughout September. So if you listen to this when it comes out, I have a ridiculous bundle. I think it's ridiculous, but hopefully you'll find it absolutely amazing, where it's basically lifetime access to either French or German or Spanish resources, plus all of my workshops from last year. So it's my new GCSE workshop series from last year, my three workshops that I did on phonics and stretch and challenge and exploited one text, plus access to my digital course at creating outstanding MFL lesson, plus access to all of the workshops that I'm doing this year. I mean, it's an unlimited amount of value, because if you subscribe to my resources every year, it's £97 a year. So that could be like, you know, £970 if you do it for 10 years. So yeah, all that for 3 years worth of resources subscription. So it's £291 for all of that, which, like I say, I think is slightly mad. But yeah, I think it's a great offer. So yeah, get your hands on that by the end of September. Okay, a few more quicker questions. And this is the general, like, what's the impact going to be of the new GCSE? Do you think grade boundaries will be less severe with this new course? The MFL will be brought in line with other EBAC subjects. And this relates to another question. Do you think the overall standards of pupil attainment and levels of pupil engagement will improve with the new GCSE? So this is an ongoing issue, and it's something that Helen Myers kind of vaguely touched on in my interview with her. If you haven't listened to that as well, go back and listen to that one. It's such a good interview. She's so amazing. So yeah, this is something that is a constant battle with MFL, that grade boundaries are much higher. Grading is really severe. I really hope that this is something that is going to be sorted out with the new GCSE, but who knows? And then also kind of related to this, I had a couple of questions about A-levels, and a lot of people have spoken to me about A-levels over the past year. Do you think A-level changes are on the horizon? And do you think these changes to GCSE restrict access to A-level MFL? So I've not seen any indication at all that A-levels are going to be reformed. The jump from this new GCSE to the current A-level is enormous, beyond enormous. I mean, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but to go from, okay, if you're doing A-level, you know, you're going to have done the higher paper, I'm pretty sure. So to go from only working with 1,700 words to being able to do an A-level in 2 years, well, it's not even 2 years, is it? It's really just a year and a half by the time, you know, we were actually doing your exams and stuff like that. It's a lot. It's going to be really, really hard for a lot of people. And obviously the concern there is that people are just going to stop opting for A-level languages. I don't know. I'd be really interested to know people's thoughts on this, actually, because it's, yeah, it's a difficult one. I've got a question about dictations, which I'm going to read out the question, but I am doing a whole episode on dictations. I think I'll leave my answer for that episode. But again, this is something that I think is really worth thinking about, and I'd love to know if anybody has any thoughts on this. So what will be the steps you practice in order to teach dictation to non-English and non-L2 natives? And the same with translation into English for EAL pupils. So with the translation, I mean, we've been doing translation since 2016, haven't we? So hopefully people have got things in place for that. But yeah, your EAL pupils are going to be disadvantaged, but I guess not as much as they are in, you know, an English or a history exam. So teaching dictation to non-English and non-L2 natives, I think, is a really, really interesting point. As I say, I'd love to know your thoughts on that. And I will go into more depth about dictations in my dictations episode and my dictations workshop that I'm going to be doing in October. So I've got some other questions here as well that are more sort of curriculum focused and how people are changing their curriculum. So in my new MFL GCSE workshop series that I did last academic year, I did talk about, you know, how to adapt your current resources, how to adapt your current GCSE. I do have a mini little training video type thing on my free resources called Adapting Current Resources for the New GCSE. So again, just go onto my homepage, click on free resources, and then it's in there with, there's about four videos up there at the moment. So just, yeah, how to adapt your current GCSE resources for the new GCSE. But yeah, so a bit more specific than that, I'm curious to know how people are planning to adapt their existing formative assessment plans to ensure they adequately prepare students in the new skills being examined, i.e. dictation, reading aloud, etc. So I have talked about this on previous episodes, and I've definitely talked about this in my workshop series. I don't think it's going to be too hard. So with a reading aloud, either you can literally just get them to come and read a text aloud to you, if that's the way you do speaking exam preparation, or, you know, speaking formative assessments right through from year seven, or once every half term, or even just once a term, you can get your students to record themselves reading something out loud, and then they send you that recording, and then you can mark it that way. Don't do it more than once per half term, because it's going to be a lot of marking for you. Give them spoken feedback as well. So listen to what they say and then record something and send that back to them. I'm sure schools, hopefully these days, have got the capacity for you to do that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's not going to be too difficult. And with dictation, just include dictation as part of your listening assessments. It's part of the listening exam. So anytime you're doing a listening formative assessment, just make sure there's a dictation in there. It doesn't matter if it's exactly the same as the style of dictations in the exam. All you need is 3, 4, 5 sentences, nice and clear, nice and slow, even if you read them out loud yourself. I have created some dictations workbooks, which are available as part of my resources subscriptions, and obviously Buy Everything, because Buy Everything is literally what it says on the tin, Buy Everything. So yeah, so use those. I think the exam boards have created extra read aloud and dictation tasks as well. But I think when it comes to formative assessments for, you know, Key Stage 3, I think you want to be including these types of tasks, because I think they need to get used to it for the GCSE. But it doesn't matter if it's that close to what they're actually going to have in the exam. Any practice they have of these skills is absolutely fantastic, as far as I'm concerned. Another question related to curriculum changes, and again, this is something I've talked about in workshops, and I think I have talked about this in a previous podcast episode as well. What changes have people made to their Key Stage 3 curriculums to build the new key skills? So I will answer this quickly by saying the one thing that I have been advising people over the past year, when I've done in-person workshops, when I've done bespoke online workshops, when I've done my online big group workshops and things like that, focus on phonics. So if you have not embedded phonics into your everyday teaching and lesson planning, that is something that you really, really need to be doing over the coming weeks. Try and do it as quickly as you possibly can, but definitely over the coming months and years. It's absolutely essential that you understand what it means to teach phonics, what it means to embed them in your teaching, and what it means in terms of the exams and assessments. The more I learn and the more I think about phonics, the more I am massively on board with this, because I really think, and I think this is something I wish I'd known 20 years ago, that when you break down pronunciation into the constituent parts, rather than here's a like complicated French word and this is how you pronounce it. So I don't know, the word voudrais, for example, je voudrais. I remember some year sevens saying je vendredi, and I was like, why are you saying vendredi instead of voudrais? And actually, if we had broken it down into the constituent parts, that the OU is an OU sound, and try to practice R, and then that the AIS, that the S is silent and the AI is an A sound. And, you know, if we'd actually focused on the phonics and really getting to grips with how you say these different parts of the words, then when they're reading the words and when they're trying to say the words out loud, their brains have already been trained in those sounds. So yeah, that's the main thing I would say for people who want to change their Key Stage 3 curriculum. Another curriculum-based question is quite a long question that someone sent me as a DM. So I'm going to read the whole DM. And we did have quite a conversation about it, actually, but I said I will talk about it on the podcast as well. Okay, so this is about Spanish, but it's pretty much true for French as well. So she said, the only requirement for the subjunctive is the present subjunctive, first person to third person singular at higher. All right, so the first person being I, second person being you as in singular, So tu or tu or du in German, and he, she, it. Right, so the only requirement for the subjunctive is those, and it's just a present subjunctive because imperfect subjunctive is never needed in French. I don't even know if it's needed at A-level. Anyway, to achieve top marks in productive skills, there's no requirement to use language outside of the spec. So if plus imperfect subjunctive plus conditional phrases, are they now superfluous? Basically, is what she's asked me. So, si tuviera más dinero, me gustaría ir a, I don't know, Francia. I can't think of a really good example. It's always the way, isn't it? But anyway, yeah. So if I had more money, I would go to France. I would like to go to France. So my thoughts on that. So I'm going to break this down because there is more. My thoughts on that quickly is still teach that to your grade 7 to 9. Again, if you're trying to get people to think about doing A-level, they are lovely phrases, okay? And I think it's really important for students to be able to give these kind of hypothetical situations. So I would continue to teach them. At the end of the day, they're not going to be marked down for language that isn't on the prescribed vocab list or the prescribed grammar lists. They won't get extra credit for it, but I still think it will add to an overall impression for examiners to say this is a wide range of vocabulary and structures. Yes, it's not on the vocab list, but it sounds really great. So yeah, I would still teach those things, maybe just as, you know, one or two as set phrases, but I would never, ever, even with the, you know, with the old GCSE, well, I guess the current GCSE, poor old year 11s are still doing this current GCSE, I would never have said, oh yeah, you need to teach like how to form the imperfect subjunctive. So yeah, again, I'd love to know what people's thoughts are on that. And then the other part of the message that she sent me was, I've heard a lot of people just making small changes to their scheme of work, but surely the whole point of this move was to make the course more accessible. If we just carry on doing the same as we always did, are we doing lower grades a disservice? Exposure to lots of exam-wise unnecessary language and structures while reducing their time to focus on what they really need. Then there's a question of readiness for A-level. So I've already talked about A-level a little bit. The new spec doesn't get them ready for A-level. So where is the balance in a mixed ability class? I mean, I could do a whole podcast episode on this. My main thoughts about this is, in many ways, I think you do need to just carry on doing what you've always done. Teacher workload is insane. And anything that adds to your workload is, you know, causing stress and burnout and things like that. So as much as you possibly can, just stick with what you are currently doing. Don't panic about making it perfect for year 10 right now at the beginning of September. Don't panic about that. It doesn't matter if what you're teaching year 10 is the same as what you taught the current year 11s for the new GCSE. It doesn't matter. You just need to get back into the flow of the school year and gradually work out as you go through your lessons, actually, you know, as you're planning your lessons for the week. You know, I mean, I must admit, I used to plan lessons like a day or two ahead because I don't know about you, I just used to forget. So if I planned a lesson a week ahead, I'd go to teach a lesson. I'd be like, what am I teaching? What's this lesson all about? Anyway, that's just me and my crazy brain. So yeah, so as you're planning your lessons, you know, for the coming week or next week, just have a little look at them, have a little tweak, have a look at the, so on the AQA website, there are some really good documents that show exactly what grammar's needed. If you are using the textbooks, have a look at the grammar that's used in the new textbooks and just kind of do it gradually from there. I think I will finish with this thought. When there is something like a new specification, I think it's very easy to look at it as an enormous mountain and to think, I need to zoom up to the top of that mountain as quickly as I possibly can. And you can't run up a mountain unless you're incredibly fit. You have to just gradually plod and plod and plod and plod. And eventually you will get to the top of that mountain. I'm not sure where I'm going with this analogy, but I'm going to keep going. Eventually you will get to the top of the mountain and the view will be lovely and clear from the top. There you go. My beautiful little mountain analogy there. But yeah, so, you know, it's like, how do we eat an elephant one bite at a time, which is a horrible thing to say. But anyway, that type of thing, it's so easy to just look at this as an insurmountable obstacle. And it's not an insurmountable obstacle. Focus on one thing at a time. Focus on the grammar, if that is something that's important to you. Focus on the phonics, which is something that's important to me and should be important to you. And is actually really, really good for the kids as well. There is a University of York multilingual profiler, which I have talked about in a couple of my free videos that are on my free resources. Use that to check whether your current texts actually, how many of the words in the current text that you're using are actually on the prescribed vocab list. If they're not, maybe change them around. If they're not, just add them as a glossary if it's a reading task. You don't have to constantly reinvent the wheel and just take it one step at a time. So I hope there has been some useful little snippets of information in there for you. If you've got more questions about the new GCSE, join the Facebook group. Every Monday, there is a pre-scheduled post, which is ask a question about the new GCSE. And I try to go in there and answer the questions as much as I can. Other people have been amazing at responding to the questions and helping and giving, you know, their information, things that they've learned and what they understand as well. So it's a brilliant, brilliant group. And it's a really, really useful resource for people as we embark upon this new GCSE. So, as I say, I'm going to be back next week with this interview with Jo Dale, which is absolutely fabulous. Make sure that you have pressed subscribe so that all the episodes come straight into your phone or iPad or wherever you're listening to the podcast. And yeah, see you next week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kate Languages podcast. If you did, please think about leaving me a 5-star review. And you can also tag me on social media to let me know you've been listening and let me know your thoughts on the episode. Also, don't forget to subscribe so the next episode of the Kate Languages podcast can be delivered straight to your device as soon as it's released. But until then, auf Wiedersehen, au revoir, adios, bye.